It's my pleasure to welcome to the program John Hansen. Hey, John, how are you?
John, good to chat with you. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Sure. You know, I was listening to, I got up early one day. I don't know why I was up so early. And I turned on what I thought was going to be Bob Surratt, right? And I hear you, and I'm like, wow, this guy's good. Who is this? Who are you anyway, John?
Well, thanks for not going back to bed. I appreciate that, John.
No, who are you?
So seriously. I grew up in Downers Grove.
Okay.
I started on WGN as a traffic reporter like 10 years ago. I worked a website called DNA Info, which is now Block Club Chicago. Worked on WCIU-TV for a number of years, too, and now I've been filling in on GN for the past couple of years. Every now
Very
and then,
good.
Bob, I was on for John Williams this morning.
Yep.
I go wherever they tell me. So
That's the way to be. You do a great job. I just wanted to let you know.
Appreciate it. Thank you. I appreciate it. It means a lot coming from you.
Oh yes, it does. you are now part of the Block Club, the first podcast for the Block Club, which, by the way, I think is a great organization. And it's called It's All Good, a Block Club Podcast. And you're out with the first episode.
Yes, last Thursday we launched our first episode. Block Club Chicago started a couple of years ago, as you know, John, and most of the listeners probably do too. They are guests frequently on Bob's show.
Yeah.
Talking about extremely local news, things that are happening in the neighborhoods with reporters covering the beats. And, you know, this past year, you know, not all of the news has been good. And they broke the Laredo hospital story and the vaccines. But they're really well known for their coverage of everyday Chicago and to do extraordinary things. So a couple months back, I started a conversation with the great folks over there, who many of whom I knew from DNA Info when I worked there. And we just thought, you know, we all hear the bad news. I mean, look, we talk about it on WGN Radio when we need to. Those are big conversations that need to be had. But I think 20 minutes a week, a little break, is a good thing. So we focus on, you know, it's the good news from people that, you know, live their lives every day in Chicago. I think like 99% of us, you know, we want to just be happy, healthy, love each other, and be happy. And these are the people that do extraordinary things.
Can you give us an example?
I can. I came prepared for this interview, John. our first episode, which came out last Thursday, was called The Chef and the Swimmer. And we focused on two Chicagoans. One of them is Mike Earhart. He grew up on the city's south side and part of a gang culture, was a drug dealer. But he spent the money that he earned as a drug dealer on groceries. He loved cooking as a kid, and he grew up in the Elk Hill Gardens Project. And he would feed kids in the neighborhood with the groceries he made, trying out new recipes, because he didn't like eating beans. He said that's what we always ate. So he left that gang life years ago and since then started the Taste for the Homeless, where he has a big white van that we see, and he has a grill. He has groceries in it. He shops. He gets funding through Chance the Rapper. And literally, he'll park up on areas where, you know, he knows that homeless people dwell or where they live temporarily.
Right.
Gets the grills out, fires them up, and cooks them really good meals, not just a sandwich or something you get at the 7-Eleven, but he cooks good burgers, he cooks good meat, and he does this 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. He will stop anywhere if he sees someone homeless and try and help them out, cook them something, give them groceries. He has a bunch of pairs of shoes in the car, nice new shoes, toiletry packets, and he does all of this because he feels like he was brought to earth to do this, and it's just an incredible story.
You know, you led off the story of this person with the news, the information that he was a drug dealer, but he took the money from the drugs and bought groceries, and he was also a gang member.
Mm-hmm.
Where did the switch happen? Where does he go from being basically a criminal who buys groceries to a philanthropist and someone who is truly helping the homeless of Chicago?
Well, he talks a lot about how he was a member of a gang, but he was always 1 foot in, 1 foot out. He tried to stay on the peripheral, not on the, I guess you say, the mean streets, the violent sort of things. He said he'd go to church every other day, twice a week, and pray, saying he knew what he was doing was wrong, and that he tried to use the little money that he earned here and there for good means. And I think it's interesting because I kind of ask the same thing. Like, when we think of, you know, being as part of a gang, we think there's a, you either end up dead or you end up in prison. And unfortunately, of course, a lot of young men, young adolescent boys in our city do. But there is that transfer that a lot of people make to a normal life. And what he says is the lessons of fellowship that he actually learned in the gang were the sense of belonging. He has bottled that up, and that's what he says is what he took out of it. The silver lining of that experience was taking that sense of we're in this together, and instead of using it for gang culture, obviously he's using it, and he talks about it openly to other people that he meets on the streets and tries to steer people in the right direction. But he's a very forgiving guy, and he definitely asks for forgiveness. And based on the work he's done, I think he's certainly earned it for us.
You know, I think if you're born into a neighborhood or an environment that has drugs and gangs as part of its description and has had it for years, that as you grow older, it would be almost impossible, it seems to me, to escape the influences of those kind of individuals who seem to populate your neighborhood. And it would be, you know, I try to think about, what if I was in that particular situation? You know, I don't think that I'd be such a, you know, I don't think I'd be such a great guy because...
Well, you get... Yeah.
You know, because that's right, the culture... That's sort of surrounding you and trying to grab you and pull you in. At least as far as I understand it, and I'm certainly no expert.
All my friends played Little League baseball. All my friends got bikes. I didn't particularly like either of those things, but I did that because they did that.
Right.
And I think you're driving at a very, very important point, and what gets lost in the shuffle when you watch 30 seconds of news coverage on what happened, that these are actual people just trying to get by.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you came on. Do you want to talk some more? Because I got a break.
Oh, sure. I'm always happy to.
John Hansen is with us. We'll talk more about the First Block Club podcast when we come back on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, John Landecker at 847, having a conversation with John Hansen, who you hear now and again here at WGN. And he's hosting a brand new podcast called It's All Good, a Block Club podcast, and we are discussing episode one. So, John, what do you think about this whole podcast thing?
I think it's here to stay, John. I think.
Oh no, I think it's even more than that. I mean, I've got people. I mean, not my people. I've had conversations with people who have been in this business for quite a while and know what they're talking about, and some folks think that that will actually replace what we know as radio in the not too distant future.
I'll tell you what, I listen to some podcasts. I have my niche. I love true crime. So I have my true crime podcasts, right? And I have a couple longer form ones. And there are days that, yes, that's what I want to plug in and listen to. And maybe I'm just old school, but I mean, there's still days where, you know, I want to know what's happening immediately in the conversation around. I'm not just saying that because I do that, but it's an interesting, I think a lot of people ride the line between the two.
Yeah. And I think it also has to do somewhat with what generation you're in. Because certainly people of my generation are not as savvy when it comes to new media or changes in the way things are done. And people like Tom Hush, who are like 27 years old, you know, you get something new, they're right on it. And the whole podcast world to me is baffling. I mean, I heard that there were like, I don't know, some extremely, like 800,000 podcasts in the world or something like that. I mean, I might be wrong with that number. But
It's a niche thing, right? Like, I think there are some more broader podcasts, but boy, if you love... You love talking about airline disasters. There's 10,000 podcasts for you just about that, right? But I think that that is the world we live in, where if you have that thing, you have that ability to consume it now. And some of them are great. Some of them are not. I mean, you mentioned 800,000. There's some folks that, you know, it's just them talking in their closet, which I'm sure their mother loves to listen to. But I don't know if it has a wide appeal. It's interesting, though. It's a... You know, it's I'm kind of in between. I'm 36, so I'm technically a millennial. But I grew up, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s. I would listen to AM talk radio because my parents did under the covers all night just because it was so cool to hear. So I kind of I didn't have the internet until I went to college, which was still a lot earlier than many of our listeners, of course. But I'm just I kind of straddle that line between these two media worlds. And I guess that's why it's fun to. Do a little of both, I guess.
Yeah. Who came up with the idea for this podcast? It's All Good, a Block Club podcast.
Well, I think, you know, we had been talking with the folks at Block Club about what we were going to do. Do we want to do a daily podcast, enter this? You know, when they launched, they were, part of this was they promised a podcast as part of their GoFundMe campaign. That's how Block Club got started, and they, you know, that was one of the goals they had was we want to enter the podcast world here locally a couple years ago, and they finally have ramped up enough to be able to do that. And eventually we just settled on the good news that, you know, after a year of this pandemic, you know, I don't remember whether it was Jen Sabella, one of the editors, or Seamus just said, why don't we focus on the good for now? Maybe we'll have future podcasts along the lines that can be more frequent and more of the run of the day's news, but why don't we give everyone a break and just let them embrace for 20 minutes the good side of things? Yeah. So I don't know who it was particularly. I'll take credit for it if I can't remember.
I think if you can grab that brass, if you can grab that brass ring, I totally encourage you to do so. So this episode one is named The Chef and the Swimmer. And
yes, we did part one already.
And I'm telling you, that story about Mike Earhart is just incredible. Just incredible.
Great.
Yeah. Now, so well, that's the chef. So what's the swimmer?
Well, Miriam Franchi is a Humboldt Park native. She went to Roberto Clemente Academy, which is like on Division and Western. She was a swimmer. And she said that she grew up in a family that she had a little rough growing up. And in a neighborhood, it was a little rough. And swimming was her outlet. And Roberto Clemente Academy actually has a gorgeous swimming pool. Many CPS schools do. Well, years after she graduated, 7 or 8 years, she had heard through a friend that the girls' swimming program that she had been a part of was no longer there. And she found out that the boys' swimming program, she knew it wasn't there when she was in high school, hadn't been around for 30 years.
What?
And she said, swimming was my outlet. There is a giant pool there. Let's get these kids in the pool and be a swim team. But she's not a teacher, so she joined as a security guard at Roberto Clemente Academy, and was able to build the very first boys swimming team in 30 years at that high school this year.
That is just shocking that this swimming pool sat there with no one using it for 30 years. Wouldn't you think that would be noticed by someone and say, what is this swimming pool doing here? Well, you know, what do we do with this? Why, we put water in it, and then you swim in it. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, that just sounds like total neglect to me. I mean, it's...
And she felt the same way. I mean, her response was like, what? What do you mean this is just not being used? So, I mean, luckily, you know, she had to go through a lot of hoops. I mean, imagine starting a program in a high school. CPS, like many other districts, there's bureaucratic red tape through the eyes for her to be able to do it. But she found, and she had to go, Clemente's known as a baseball school, though, surprise.
Obviously, oh, yeah.
They're named after Roberto Clemente. And she had to recruit from baseball, from track, from these other sports, and convince boys who had never really swam all that much to join her team. And she said, look, we're going to be a family. I'm going to show you that the community will come out. And they did. They donated money. They donated supplies. She said that the look that the students had when she opened up the supply closet and just to see they had packed it with water, with Cheetos, with little swimming equipment, money for them to use to be able to go to different schools to compete. And in 1 year, they won their conference.
No kidding.
Through COVID. And now she hopes to get the girls program back next year. It's just She's just someone that stood up and said, that's not okay. This helped me. I know this can help boys and girls in this neighborhood. I'm going to do it. And that's who we like to highlight on the show.
Yeah. And the whole idea that she realized, well, first of all, that the pool was not being used for three decades, and that there was no way for her to enter the structure of the school as a teacher or anything else, but then she got in as a security guard. I mean, that is, that's motivation. You know, if, how am I going to get into this school? How am I going to do this? I can't be a teacher, but I can be a security guard, and I'll go in and try to affect change doing that. I wonder how many vacant pools there are around the Chicago public school system that just sit there inside schools.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's got to be a lot, because she said, you know, I grew up in the suburbs, but she mentioned, you know, when she competed, you know, she would go to these schools, and there's a lot of good CPS pools out there. And, you know, a lot of schools would be blessed to have one, and to think of one just being unused is a tragedy.
Well, yeah, not only unused, but unused for 30 years. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, I could see maybe something's wrong and we can't use the pool for 1 or 2 years, or it needs renovating or whatever.
Whatever. But
30 years? Come on. Yeah. I can get. What's in that room over there? Oh, you don't want to look at that. It's a big pool.
It's a big space they got there.
John, thanks for being with us. This really sounds like a great project, and it's available on Apple and Spotify, or, you know, wherever you want to get your favorite.
Wherever you want. And this week's episode, really quickly, is called The Pastor and the Ninja. And that's all I'll say about it.
Oh, wow. Cool. All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
You bet. John Hansen, who you hear occasionally filling in for folks. He filled in for John Williams today here at 720 WGN. And this really sounds like a totally worthwhile project that will lift your spirits by people who have lifted themselves, so to speak. It's All Good, a Block Club podcast hosted by John Hansen, into episode 2, as he mentioned there, with a very intriguing title. And when I get off tonight, I'm going to find out exactly what those details are.